May it please the court. My name is John Springer. I represent the appellant in this case, Scott Tuzino. He was the respondent in the trial court matter below. I'll refer to the parties as father and mother. This is a case about jurisdiction. Jurisdiction, I think, can be simply put as the authority of a court to decide a case that's presented to it. If we look,
you're confusing, it seems to be two things, jurisdiction and authority. That seems to be clearly the court had jurisdiction because it's the district court and that has jurisdiction over domestic relations, and both parties were apparently subject to the jurisdiction of the court. The question I think you're raising is whether the court had authority with only father's motion pending to give father less visitation when he was in fact asking for more.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And I claim that the court's subject matter jurisdiction had not been properly invoked because mother had not filed a motion asking for the relief that the court gave her, namely...
How do you deal with the language in the statute that says the court can do it on its own motion?
That statute is 1410.124, and it applies to the initial allocation of parenting time and decision-making responsibility. The initial allocation that would be made by the court at the time of the entry of permanent orders. But with respect to reallocation, that is modification of parental responsibilities, that falls under 1410.129 with respect to parental responsibilities and 1410.131 with respect to decision-making responsibilities. And those statutes do not give the court any authority to act on its own motion. The authority of the court to act on its own motion is only with respect to the initial allocation that is made at the time of permanent orders. And I think the purpose of the statute was that if the parties don't include these matters in their parenting plan, the court can move the case off dead center and act on its own motion and allocate the parental responsibilities. But with respect to reallocation, that is post-decree modification, that falls under the two statutes I mentioned. And in order to invoke the court's jurisdiction, the mother had to specifically request the court to reduce father's parenting time and reduce or completely eliminate his decision-making responsibilities. Because here we have the odd situation where father filed a motion asking for more parenting time and more decision-making responsibilities.
Well, he apparently tried to withdraw part of it because mother was not going to move to Virginia. Father was going to apparently withdraw part of it because mother was not going to move to Virginia, and mother objected.
Mother, in a half-hearted way, objected to the withdrawal. If you read the record, it's not really clear what the mother was saying. She certainly did not specifically request that father's decision-making responsibilities be eliminated. Father was attempting to withdraw that aspect of his motion because the factual predicate for the motion had become moot.
Mother urged, though, that the court should examine what the evaluator had written. Did she not, at the time that father tried to withdraw the portion of his request?
I'm sorry, Judge, what are you saying?
Mother asked the court at the time that father attempted to withdraw that the court should nevertheless consider what the evaluator had reported.
Well, he didn't say that. He just said, I think I'm quoting it correctly, we think the court should consider it. That's all he said. Just consider it. Well, I don't know what it was, but in any event, he didn't, that is, mother's counsel, did not request the court to reduce parenting time or eliminate decision-making responsibilities. He just said, I think the court should consider it.
The court construed that as a request to look at what the evaluator had reported and to adjust the decision-making and the parenting time accordingly.
I think so.
And you say that that he has to utter magic words in order to let the court perform that sort of action?
I think he has to be more specific and articulate than he was. But in any event, this kind of request, in my opinion, in my judgment, needs to be presented in written motion.
But the Stroud case, which you discussed in your reply brief, clearly states that a motion made during a hearing need not be in writing.
Well, that's if it's proper to make the kind of motion during the hearing. But I think the only fair, rational reading of Section 129 and 131 is that this kind of request needs to be put in a written submission filed with the court before the hearing.
How is this different than the Stroud case in that regard?
Well, I didn't read the Stroud case to say that you could appear at a hearing and ask the court to drastically modify decision-making responsibilities by eliminating those and reduce parenting time without any prior notice to the other side that's what your request was going to be. I think that it's a tortured, unreasonable reading of those statutes to say that this kind of motion can be presented orally at the time of hearing. Because if you read those statutes carefully, although they don't expressly state that the request must be put in written form, they do make an oblique reference to written motions by saying that if a motion is filed with the court, regardless of whether it's granted or not, the motion cannot be renewed for another 2 years. And if the General Assembly was making that kind of admonition in the statute, I think that it was the clear intent to require that these motions be made and filed in writing and not presented at the time of the hearing.
Well, are you making a due process argument? You talk about an oblique reference that you had no idea that a mother was seeking what she was seeking, even though the expert's report had indicated that there should be a change in the allocation, the parenting allocation, 6 months prior to that?
Well, I think there was a due process violation, but the main thrust of my argument is not due process, it's jurisdiction. Now, I think that you can make a very good due process argument that mother did not know, father did not know exactly what the mother was going to be requesting. She knew what was in the report, but she didn't know exactly. I mean, he didn't know exactly. I think that this has to be in writing. I think that this is a matter that transcends the question of due process. I think it's clearly a jurisdictional matter because it depends upon what it takes to invoke the court's jurisdiction to reallocate parenting time and decision-making responsibilities. Does that request have to be put in writing and filed with the court as any other motion, or can it just be made orally at the time of the hearing? I don't think that jurisdiction can be invoked in a matter this serious by an oral motion made at the time of the hearing. And furthermore, I would say that mother did not request a reduction of parenting time or elimination of decision-making responsibilities simply by saying, well, we think the court should consider it. That's just not enough. It has to be more articulate.
Well, if it is jurisdictional, not an authority, father create the jurisdiction with his motion? I mean, it seems to, just let me make a brief argument to you. I've just gone through a hearing. I represent mother in this hearing. And the evidence all indicates, and it's just father's motion that's pending, the evidence all indicates that the children are being abused, the children are not happy, the children are not well cared for in fathers, and the recommendation of at least one of the experts is that the father should not have custody. You're telling me that as counsel for the wife, I cannot then argue that?
That's right.
And have the court grant that?
You have to create a controversy. A judge only has the authority to decide a controversy that's presented to him. And without the existence of a controversy, the court has no power to act. That is the whole sense of jurisdiction, is the power to decide a case that's presented. And a controversy has to be presented. That is, one side has to take one position, the other side has to take the other position prior to the hearing. You can't generate a create a controversy at the time of the hearing. This is something that has to be presented and invoked prior to the hearing. And it wasn't in this case.
You didn't talk about reservation of time. You're down to about 4 1/4 minutes. Do you want to reserve time?
I would, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Evan Scott Ray appearing on behalf of Pelley Kimberly Lund. Let me be clear. Let's be clear. Father filed a verified motion to increase parenting time, or in the alternative, modify the allocation of parental responsibilities and modification of child support. He filed that in November of 2005. Mother filed an objection. All right, so a controversy existed in November. The father, interestingly, in father's motion for modification of parenting time, he asks for generally 180 overnights. He asks for a modification of parenting time, but he doesn't request that it go to sole decision making. And I would submit to the court the reason why he didn't request sole decision making, he simply asks for more decision making responsibilities. I would submit that when father filed his motion, he understood that by filing this motion, it invokes the court's jurisdiction, and the court can make and modify allocation of decision-making responsibilities after that time. I would submit to the court that 129 actually does state that a court can make or modify a parenting time order. 131 does not have the key phrase make or modify, so it could be argued that 131 does not authorize the court upon its own motion to modify the allocation of decision-making responsibilities. However, 124 subsection 1.5b does do that. 1410.124 subsection 1.5b talks about the allocation of decision-making responsibilities. There was a controversy right from the beginning, 3 years ago, over 3 years ago. Father cites the Nichols case as the only authority that it has to state that no controversy existed. Well, the Nichols case is readily distinguishable in that the trial court, on its own accord, issued an order challenging the reasonableness of a party's attorney's fees in the Nichols case. Like I've stated previously, in this case, mother filed a motion, and she filed a response to the motion to modify parenting time decision-making, and she objected. At that time...
Could you say that again? I got lost. Mother did what?
The father's original motion was filed in November of 2005. Mother filed a response approximately 2 weeks later, which objected to the
his request for additional time.
Correct.
Didn't say anything about her cutting back on his time or her getting additional time, did it?
It did not say anything about that.
Isn't that sort of what the issue is here, is whether father had sufficient notice when he showed up at the hearing that mother was asking for additional time for him to have reduced time?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that when we're talking about the best interest of the children, I think that both parties are on notice as soon as a motion is filed that the court can make or modify parenting time in the best interest of the children, whether that's increasing mothers, decreasing mothers, increasing fathers, or decreasing fathers. by that rationale that you just asked about, the responding party to a motion to modify parenting time would always have to ask for zero overnights for the other party, whereas the party filing the motion to modify parenting time would always have to ask for 365 overnights. That would allow the party that's obviously on both extremes, but that is the only way that the court would have jurisdiction to award parenting time in the best interest of the children. If mother would have asked for his parenting time to be reduced to, say, 10 overnights, then by that rationale, the court wouldn't have jurisdiction to reduce below 10 overnights.
Counsel, was there any objection made when it became clear that the court was going to consider the evaluator's recommendation and do something different than what, consider doing something different than what father's motion had requested?
With regard to decision-making responsibilities?
Well, as far as notice goes, that there was no notice that that the court was going to embark on this route.
Can you rephrase the question?
Okay.
I apologize.
When father tried to withdraw his motion and there was some discussion about mother filing her own motion and make an oral motion basically to have the court consider it, was there any objection from father that he had no notice that this was going to happen and that there was some due process problem?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
And was this required?
I don't believe so. Well, father's position is that he can withdraw since he filed the original motion to modify decision-making responsibilities, he can withdraw it at any time. I don't believe that's true. I think pursuant to Rule 41, he has to, once the time for responding to the motion has expired, he has to, that request to withdraw his motion or dismiss his motion has to be approved by the court. If you're asking whether he made a due process argument, I don't know that answer. If we're talking about due process in that regard, again, the case had been pending for 3 years. The special advocate, actually, I think it was a motion for a supplemental mental health evaluation at that point. Anyway, that mental health professional had recommended that, and all parties were on notice.
There were apparently two evaluations done. You couched them as mental health. I used to couch them as home studies, but I mean, there apparently were two studies done. And I don't. What did the first one recommend, if you recall?
The first one recommended joint decision making and an equal split of parenting time.
And mother was not happy with that and wanted a second one.
And requested a supplemental mental health evaluation, which the statute.
Now, what do you mean by a mental health evaluation?
The original, this case was in 2005, so I believe it was a special advocate. I'm not positive on that, but I believe the first home visit, as you say, was a special advocate's report. The second was a supplemental mental health evaluation. When someone files for a supplemental mental health evaluation, they're basically stating that they want a more in-depth review of the party's mental states to provide more information to the court than what the original.
This is different than a home study. This is different than seeing the children in the presence of each parent and making an evaluation about parenting time or decision making.
Typically, but both the home study, as you're referring to it, it's now called a child and family investigator. I think
always a more technical term for
right,
it.
Right. I think that's what you're referring to, right? But that individual will do a home study, interview the children, interview the parents, put both of the parties together.
That wasn't done here.
That was done. That was done back in 2006. And then a supplemental investigation was done.
At mother's request.
At mother's request by someone who had mental health qualifications.
And they made recommendations on the same sorts of subject matter.
Correct. Okay. And they addressed the issue of decision-making responsibilities. And let's not forget that individual actually found that the father's, the joint decision-making was endangering the well-being of the children. So,
how soon before the hearing was that report filed? Were the parties aware of it?
Oh, absolutely.
No, how soon before or how long before?
I believe it was approximately 6 months.
Okay.
So absolutely, the parties were aware of those recommendations, and the motion to withdraw the motion to withdraw the motion to modify decision-making responsibility was filed on the day of. So if due process is an issue, I don't believe it is, the father had more than enough time to prepare and cross-examine both experts. In fact, he hired his own expert who provided testimony at the hearing regarding decision-making and to rebut the joint expert, or well, the court-appointed
expert. The second expert.
The second expert or the court-appointed expert. The mental health evaluation has to be approved by the court and issued in that fashion. And then last, I just want to address the issue of attorney's fees. I think the Castillo-Copes-Conway case, which was cited in the brief, provides that a frivolous argument shall, each appeal shall have a coherent assertion of error supported by legal authority. There wasn't any legal authority, no, absolutely nothing, other than the Nichols case, to support the position that the court was without jurisdiction to modify decision-making, even though father put it at issue. And the parenting time argument I can't imagine what kind of results we would get if each party is stuck with the initial request and the initial pleading. Many times.
But have you requested fees under the Dissolution of Marriage Act?
I believe fees were requested in the Dissolution of Marriage Act.
In court?
Under 1410.119? No, I have not.
So you're only asking it under 1317.102 or whatever it is?
That's correct. Like I said, I can't imagine the outcomes of some of these cases when a motion to modify parenting time is filed, especially in Arapahoe County. A lot of times, you don't get in front of the court for a year. You've got a CFI investigation. You've got a mental health evaluation. A lot of times, these parents aren't communicating at all with each other, and you don't actually find out what's going on until the CFI investigation is performed or the mental health investigation is performed, or until you get into court, a lot of things come out, which I believe is why the statutes provide that the courts can make or modify parenting time orders in the best interest of the children. We find out a lot of things during the process of these investigations, which is why the statutes, 1410.116, 1410.116.5, 1410.128.1, these are all appointment of a child's legal representative, appointment of a CFI, appointment of a parenting coordinator. These are all look out for the best interest of the children, and the court, on its own motion, can appoint these individuals. I would propose that if father's assertion or father's request is that the court could only increase his parenting time to 180 overnights, we would come with we would have very
what is the status at this point? Are the parties living under the new order or the old order?
It's my understanding they're living under the new order, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't have anything further.
Ready for rebuttal, sir.
I have in my hand the response that the mother filed to father's motion for increase of parenting time and decision-making responsibilities, and the word object doesn't appear in this.
Well, it is an opposition, is it not?
It's only an opposition to the extent that the mother repeatedly says that the father isn't stating any basis or any justification or any reason why his decision-making responsibilities ought to be expanded or his parenting time ought to be expanded. That's all she says.
She's not agreeing with his position.
No. But it's clear that by not indicating in this response or in a motion that she wanted his parenting time to be reduced, his decision-making responsibility to be reduced, she's tacitly agreeing that the status quo is satisfactory. I mean, at the most, she's saying here, don't grant father's relief, but she's certainly not complaining.
At this point in time, and I don't understand how this father's motion, or at least this part of father's motion, responds to the apparent existing possibility that mother was going to move to Virginia. I mean, normally when that happens, there has to be some changes made, obviously, in visitation that would generally, without reduce the visiting time of the parent who doesn't have principal residential responsibilities, as opposed to the person with. And I don't, did you request or did the father request that he be made the principal parent? Or?
No. He just filed his motion in anticipation that she was going to leave the state of Colorado. He had heard that she was thinking about doing that. As it turned out, she decided otherwise and stayed in the state of Colorado, and accordingly, that made that aspect of his motion related to decision-making responsibilities moot, because he wanted more decision-making responsibilities if she was going to leave the state of Colorado. But when she decided to stay in the state of Colorado, that rendered that aspect of the motion moot. And under the doctrine of mootness, when there's no longer an existing controversy, then the court doesn't have any authority to enter a decision with respect to that. That's pretty clear. Counsel says that under 129 and 131, the court has the authority to modify parenting time and decision-making responsibilities, and that is absolutely true, but not on its own motion. Its jurisdiction has to be invoked. It cannot act on its own motion. I'll just repeat what I said before. It can act on it. The court, trial court, can act on its own motion with respect to the initial allocation of parenting time and decision-making responsibilities.
In this context, maybe the statute's changed, but what is the meaning of continuing jurisdiction? My recollection is that on every divorce decree and in the statute, the court maintains continuing jurisdiction over the matter with respect to child custody, visitation, decision-making, support, and maintenance. Well, now, you're saying we have to, I'm still back to you have to invoke the jurisdiction of the court. It seems to me the court had jurisdiction all the time.
No. Judge, respectfully, it didn't. The concept of continuing jurisdiction just means that you don't have to keep filing a new petition, that the court has continuing jurisdiction pursuant to the original petition that was filed. But in order to invoke the court's jurisdiction to modify any aspect of permanent orders, that requires a motion to be filed. I mean, in other words, to put it sharply, the trial judge can't go down to the file room at the district courthouse and go down through the files and pick out a file and say, oh, I think maybe this ought to be modified, and then just act on his own motion. Can't do that.
Did his father make any objection that she hadn't filed such a motion?
Did he object?
Right. When the court started to look at the evaluator's report and it became clear that this could be a possibility, did he say, no, she hasn't filed a motion?
Was it trial counsel? Can I ask trial counsel?
If you don't know the answer, that's okay.
I don't know the answer. But object or not object, a controversy had not been created because mother had not filed a motion. And that's just absolutely required. And I think that the context of my argument needs to be viewed in terms of jurisdiction. Now, I readily admit, and my client would agree, that his due process rights were violated. But I'm emphasizing that apart from that argument, the court didn't have jurisdiction. Now, if you want to talk about due process, one way of looking at that is that when father's counsel came to the hearing and asked for permission to withdraw that part of his motion that related to decision-making responsibilities, I think she had every right to believe that would be granted. I mean, I don't know what authority a court has to deny a request to withdraw a motion. It's certainly not under Rule 41. Rule 41 relates to the
counsel. We'll have to leave it there.
Okay.
You're way over your time.
All right.
Thank you. We thank you both for your briefs and arguments. The matter will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess, subject to call, and the bailiff may so announce.
All rise. The court will be in recess, subject to call.